and a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. And we want to thank the Law Group here in Wilmington once again for their support of the program this morning. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We have got a jam-packed show for you this morning. We start off with some major news in a Supreme Court election that took place here in North Carolina in November of last year that is still not finalized, still disputed. It is the final election in the country from the 2022 or the 2024 general election that has not yet been determined, and it appears after a judge order late last night that that is soon to happen. A federal district judge by the name of Richard Myers has ordered the North Carolina State Board of Elections to certify Democrat Allison Riggs as the winner of the 2024 state Supreme Court election. The decision rejects ballot challenges from Republican candidate Jefferson Griffin. With that announcement last night around 7 o'clock, Judge Myers did place a one-week hold on his decision to give time to Griffin and his legal team to decide to appeal if they would like to do so. Myers rejected a state Supreme Court decision in April that could have blocked as many as about 5,700 ballots, rejected them from the fall election. The state's highest court endorsed a ballot cure process to deal with some of those disputed ballots. If you have not been following this back and forth saga, I've been covering it in great detail on the Carolina Journal News Hour. If you're not listening to that show, it's a news-oriented program I host at 5 a.m. on WBT in Charlotte, and it's available on YouTube and podcast and all those places. This saga has been a disaster. It's been a mess for everybody involved. Now, of course, Democrats claim that this is Republicans trying to steal an election, right, because it fits their narrative. But really, what you've got going on here, and the reason that you have seen changes coming to the North Carolina State Board of Elections, you've got now the General Assembly passing legislation late last year that gave State Auditor Dave Bolick the appointment of power and authority over the State Board. It's situations like this. There is law on the books in North Carolina that requires individuals who want to vote to either to do one of two things: show a valid form of photo identification or fill out an exemption form. Those are your two options if you want to vote in North Carolina. Like dozens of other states in the U.S., there is voter ID that is legalized in North Carolina. And this is not something that the citizens of North Carolina said they were in favor of. The General Assembly posed the question to voters, was it back in 2018, whether or not they were in favor of photo identification when you vote. South Carolina's got it. Tennessee's got it. Georgia's got it. Dozens of states, just a few states just around us, have voter ID. Democrats despise voter ID, right? Because they believe that if you are from certain socioeconomic classes or from certain groups, you are incapable of getting an ID. They believe that if you're in one of their groups, that they have determined that you are incapable of getting an ID, therefore you are incapable of voting. It is bigotry of low expectations that the left plays in. So the State Board of Elections decided they were not going to follow state law and require photo ID for overseas voters. Is it a different voting situation? Yes, but the state law is still, in fact, the state law. And if you, as the State Board of Elections, determine that you're not going to follow state law, it opens this process up. It is a can of worms that Democrats, who control the State Board of Elections, have done so because it is a 3-2 board. Three of the appointments come from the governor. The previous governor was a Democrat. Josh Stein is a Democrat. The Democrats have had control over the State Board of Elections. And with that, they've had control over local county board of elections. And I don't need to remind you of the saga that played out here in New Hanover County after the election, with the local county board of elections just determining they were going to ignore state statute as they went through the process of counting ballots. They just flat out ignored it. The county then had to pay a third-party firm to come in and investigate. But these actions were taken by these boards at the state level and, in the case of the New Hanover County Board of Elections, at the local level, causing problems as it relates to elections. So are there criticisms of the State Board of Elections? Yes. Are there criticisms of Judge Jefferson Griffin and his legal team over this process? Yes, as this process is rolled out, absolutely. But the fact of this whole thing is very simple. If the State Board of Elections would have followed the law as it relates to voter ID, there would not have been any request to do this 6-7 month legal battle now that has taken place between Griffin and Riggs. And it's an unfortunate one. And I'm going to say this. I don't think the election results should be changed. I don't. With the fact that the state board did not follow the rules, you're now talking about disenfranchising voters. And I know that's the argument that the left made, but it's the truth. The people that voted and followed the procedure that the state board laid out in front of them, they didn't do anything wrong. Now, the General Assembly has now dealt with this problem. They have passed legislation that is in effect now that gives Republican auditor Dave Bolick control of the State Board of Elections, gives Republicans the control of that board and get it in compliance with law, because that's the issue at hand. So Myers has rejected a state Supreme Court decision back probably about 3 weeks ago that was going to go through a cure process of about potentially upwards of 5,700 ballots. He has rejected that. With the decision, Myers decided his decision preserves Riggs' 734-vote lead over Griffin out of more than 5.5 million ballots that were cast in the election last fall. It reads as follows. It is ordered and decreed that retroactive invalidations of absentee ballots cast by overseas military and civilian voters violates those voters' substantial due process rights. Number two. The cure process violates the equal protection rights of overseas and military civilian voters. And three, the lack of any notice or opportunity for eligible voters to contest their mistaken designation as never residents violates procedural due process and represents an unconstitutional burden on the right to vote. It is further ordered, adjudged, and decreed that the State Board of Elections shall not take any action in furtherance of the North Carolina Court of Appeals and Supreme Court's order. The board shall certify the results of the election based on the tally at the completion of the canvassing period, which was on December the 10th, 2024. With that, Myers confirming Riggs' lead. And I, for the sake of this, hope that Griffin doesn't appeal this any further. I was reading a story, I think it was over at WRAL this morning, that indicated that they were looking into the order, that they were looking into the process, and that they, it just came out last night. It was like 7-8 o'clock last night, so they haven't necessarily decided exactly what they're going to do, but the ruling is paused for 7 days. And I did want to bring this one post up from some left-wing jackass here in North Carolina, Travis Fain. He, of course, had a reaction. He used to work for WRAL News. He's now a communication consultant, very far left-wing progressive. And he tweeted this. I assume that this will be appealed, of course. Surely Judge Griffin and the NCGOP are determined to take their embarrassment to the Supreme Court. And I found that to be pretty rich. Right, because over the last couple of weeks, all we've heard from Democrats is about due process, right? If Griffin and his legal team want to take this to the United States Supreme Court, they have every right to do so. Now, I don't think it's a good idea for them to do so, but they've got every right to do so. The same way that Democrats had every right to sue the General Assembly year after year after year for redistricting. While I did not agree with what they did, they have the legal due process rights to do so. But of course, now it's an embarrassment if it's brought forward to the United States Supreme Court. So will Griffin's team appeal this? Probably not, is my guess. Maybe they will. I don't think the Supreme Court is likely to rule in their favor, but they've got every right to do so. They've got every ability to take what is an ongoing legal challenge and question and take it to the highest court possible. And the United States Supreme Court would appear to be the next avenue in this legal battle. Now, if again, I think from a political standpoint, doesn't really make a lot of sense. I think from a pure optical standpoint, doesn't really make a lot of sense. This has played out. It's been to Superior Court. It's been to the Appeals Court in North Carolina, the State Supreme Court. It's been in the U.S. Fourth Circuit District. It's been in front of Judge Richard Meyer's desk, who is a Chief District Judge. It's been all over the place. And it's an unfortunate situation, again, caused exclusively by Democrats on the State Board of Election who decided that they wanted to play fast and loose with state law as it relates to voter ID. And so if Griffin and the NCGOP want to appeal this, they have every right to do so. And that's due process, right? Something that you guys care about so much. Something that you are, you know, ragging on the Trump administration about due process. But if a Republican is to appeal this, it will be described by individuals like Travis Fain and other individuals as, oh, these are Republicans not accepting the will of the people. See, this is the inherent issue when your political party has no morals, has really no strong, concrete ideas, platforms, things that you stand on. Right, when you're constantly just flapping in the wind and picking up whatever the political story of the day is, you can't be yelling and screaming about due process for illegal immigrants in the country and then second on the second hand be pissed off when a legal challenge is appealed and taken to a higher court. You can't do both at the same time. Just it doesn't work. Doesn't really make any sense. So that's the latest this morning as it relates to the Myers, that's it as it relates this morning to the Griffin-Riggs race. U.S. Chief District Judge Richard Myers ruling that the state board shall certify this. It's going to be interesting. There is apparently some big changes, as we've as I've mentioned, that are going to be heading over to the State Board of Elections. It will be a Republican-controlled board. Not exactly sure when that's going to happen. It could be happening relatively soon. That could add a whole bunch of other interesting facets to this as well. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. And if you're interested in more of a detail on the statewide news side, I encourage you to check out the Carolina Journal News Hour and get the latest details on that. We've got a couple of other local stories that we are tracking this morning. A wildfire that started Friday in Brunswick County continues to burn this morning. The Boiling Spring Lakes wildfire has now spread to over 1,360 acres. If you listened to me yesterday and heard the coverage, you were probably asking, Nick, how's that possible? It was 1,500 acres yesterday. How is it 13.6 now? According to details from the Forest Service, they were able to get a better look at the actual fire lines yesterday. Obviously, it's hard to guess acreage when you're looking at plumes of smoke popping out of the forest. So they were able to bring that number down a little bit. It's only 1,360 acres as of right now. However, the unfortunate part is it's still only roughly 10% contained, according to officials. While they did note that while conditions have improved and the flames are now limited, the fire is still only 10% contained. There is some lingering smoke and smoldering ashes that do continue in the area. As it stands right now, there are dozens of firefighting crews from across North Carolina that are in Brunswick County fighting this fire. There were evacuation orders Friday and Saturday. Fortunately, no structures were damaged, no houses. Well, excuse me, I shouldn't say no structures. We know for a fact no homes were damaged. Can't speak to any structures that may or may not have been damaged by the wildfire. So while there aren't many flames left, officials note that there could still be some hot spots, and in fact, it could flare up again. So that is the latest that we are learning from the Forest Service, just kind of skimming through their press release. No really additional pertinent information as it relates right there. It still stands at about 10% containment and is burning a little over 1,360 acres this morning. We'll keep an eye on that. Wildfire season has already been brutal in North Carolina. Saw a bunch of fires burning out in the western half of the state. Of course, the major national attention on that major wildfire burning down in Horry County back a couple of months ago, right outside of the North Myrtle Beach area. It has been a rough season for wildfires thus far, and we'll keep an eye on this story as well. A couple of crime stories to pass along to you this morning. A victim is in critical condition this morning following a shooting that occurred overnight on Monday, May the 5th, according to the Carolina Beach Police Department. According to a press release from CBPD, officers responded to a call at the Carolina Beach Inn shortly before 3 o'clock yesterday morning. The police department then noted that a person of interest was taken into custody on unrelated charges in Florence County. That's, of course, in South Carolina. One person was found at the scene and taken to Novant Health's New Hanover Regional Medical Center with life-threatening injuries. It's not immediately clear whether that person was beaten, shot, or stabbed, but they did have life-threatening injuries, so presumably one of the three. And it is still a developing story with very little information, but you may have seen some commentary on Facebook yesterday about a large police presence down at the Carolina Inn in Carolina Beach. That is that's what it was in relation to. And turning our attention to Wilmington this morning, the Wilmington Police Department identifying the victim of a homicide that happened near the woods on Hurst and Clay Streets. Officers responded to the area around 1 p.m. on Friday for a possible medical emergency. When they arrived on scene, they found 63-year-old Cedric Atkins in the woods. According to Lieutenant Willett with the Wilmington Police Department, the victim was stabbed to death. Willett also shared that the incident didn't take place in the homeless encampment that is not super far from there. So there is this would be the first homicide of the year. There was a suspected homicide earlier this year over at the intersection of Kerr Avenue and MLK in one of the homeless encampments that was then no longer prosecuted as a homicide and turned into a self-defense case. So I believe this would make it the first homicide in the city of Wilmington. Not the details on this relatively limited as well. And unfortunately, looking at the track record of the Wilmington Police Department as it relates to providing updates and information to the public after these situations unfold, I can't sit here this morning in good faith and tell you in confidence that we're likely to get much more lengthy details from WPD. That's just the unfortunate fact of the matter with it. So if anything does come to light, any new additional details, we'll pass them along to you. But that's where we stand this morning. And in some other news this morning, a high-profile murder trial has been taking place and jury selection continues today in what was the wild saga of True Colors Brewing. If there was one ongoing story that I had, and when I say fun covering, I don't mean like I was joyful in covering it because it was an incredibly sad saga, but something that I really enjoyed doing coverage of and really I think did a really good job with the coverage of was the saga surrounding True Colors Brewing. Right, you'll remember George Taylor, this idea that he was going to open and did in fact open a brewery in downtown Wilmington that had active validated gang members as employees. Valiant effort. I mean, the premise sounded pretty good on paper. The idea that you're trying to provide individuals who in many cases may not have other options for employment due to their previous activity, the opportunity to make a living and to earn some money and to earn an income was a very noble effort. No argument there at all. Unfortunately, in practicality, it turned into a complete and utter, and I don't say this lightly, a complete and utter shit show with individuals being murdered at his son's house, people dying on the property of True Colors Brewing, a total disaster, a trial taking place this week for Raquel Adams. He is accused alongside Daryl Green and Omonte Bell of shooting and killing Corey Tyson and Brianna Emily Williams back on July 24th, 2021. Another woman was injured and survived. Jury selection is expected to start today, and expected to last a couple of days. Pretty good report from WECT on it. Let's roll that this morning.
Executive of True Colors Brewing.
Those murders happened back in 2021. Now, nearly 4 years later, and after several delays, Adams is about to go on trial. WECT's Ariana Bertolotti went to court today as those proceedings got underway.
Jury selection begins tomorrow for the murder trial of Raquel Adams. But today's pretrial hearing shows that Adams not going down without a fight.
While today mainly set the groundwork for how the double murder trial will play out, Raquel Adams' defense team sparred with prosecutors over the use of cell phone records as evidence. The defense questions the legality of law enforcement obtaining the records, while the state says those records helped connect Adams to the crime. The judge ultimately agreed to allow the phone records. Adams is one of three men accused of shooting and killing Cora Drees Tyson and Brianna Williams in Wilmington back in 2021. He is also charged with trying to kill Michaela Walker. She was shot but survived. The case garnered so much attention because the shooting happened at the home of the former chief operating officer of True Colors Brewing, a company that aimed to end gang violence. Ironically, Adams and the other two suspects are validated gang members. However, the judge decided today mentioning Adams' gang activity could impact potential jurors, and it cannot be talked about during the jury selection process or opening statements.
Again, that jury selection is set to begin tomorrow. Now we'll be following along with the case in the coming weeks, providing updates on air and online. Reporting in Wilmington, Ariana Bertolotti, WECT News.
Obviously, this report ran yesterday, so the jury selection starting tomorrow is actually today when that jury selection is slated to begin. In that case, a disaster of epic proportions with True Colors Brewing. I mean, I guess it probably is a good idea maybe to do a full look back and full deep dive. If you're interested in that, shoot a note to comment on Facebook. If you're interested in something like that, it's a wild saga with True Colors Brewing. And finally, one of those murder trials making their way to court. We'll continue to track that. And the evidence seems pretty clear cut with the three individuals. But we are a law-abiding society. You are innocent until proven guilty. And that's what a juror of peers are going to be asked to do over the next couple of days here in Wilmington as jury selection begins today. And the trial probably last a couple weeks or so. We'll provide the details and keep you up to date with those right here. I've got a very interesting story for you this morning out of CNN. I mentioned this yesterday when I was filling in for Vince Coakley on WBT. Didn't have a chance to read the story in its entirety, but I wanted to do that on the air this morning. So we'll jump into that coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Before that, I'd like to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington and appreciate them there for their continued support of the program. When legal challenges arise, trust the law group in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or in the case of us needing a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington, and they're just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online and check out all of the various services and areas of practice they excel in at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or online again at lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication that you can rely on. Appreciate the Law Group and their support here of the Nick Craig Show. We'll get into this CNN story about a deported woman from Florida back to Cuba. We'll have those details coming up in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show continues on a Tuesday morning, live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and of course 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Good Tuesday morning. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us live, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, or X, and of course, anytime, wherever you get your podcasts. We've been talking a lot about illegal immigration over the last couple of days and weeks. It has been a major discussion for the Trump campaign, it was a major discussion for the Trump campaign before his successful re-election in November of last year. And since he's been in the Oval Office, well, he has been very clear with what he was going to do. He talked and ran a years-long presidential campaign on deporting individuals illegally in the country from the United States. And I've been rather surprised thus far that while the media seemingly is now jumping on the due process train, that's all that they care about now is, well, even though these people came into the country illegally and didn't follow any sort of procedure, policy, laws that are in place, they're entitled to this due process before they can be deported. That's a different debate. We've already discussed that. I'm surprised that it's taken the media so long to come up with the heart-wrenching stories that they love. Right? So this is how the media operates. And the headline this morning over at CNN is this. Deported from Florida to Cuba, this mother saw her 17-month-year-old U.S. daughter and her American dream ripped away. That's the headline over at CNN. And what's the objective and the goal with this headline? It's to provide and for you to react emotionally to the headline. It is written in a way to extract emotion from you. That's the goal. That's the objective. Now, I'll note that outlets like CNN did not bother covering and did not bring forward any of the emotion as it related to the atrocious human trafficking and the atrocious situations that unfolded while individuals were being smuggled into the United States of America. No coverage from CNN about all of the young women that were being raped by drug traffickers and drug cartels as part of the process of bringing them into the United States. That emotion didn't matter. Right? They decided to keep quiet about that. Why? Well, because it was a bad look for their guy, Joe Biden. So CNN didn't really care too much about that. It wasn't a big issue when it was taking place. But now they want to tear at your heartstrings as it relates to this individual being deported from the United States back to Cuba. And I wanted to read through the story this morning because it is almost purely dealing with emotion. There is one little paragraph in here that has any sort of substance and, of course, is not dug into at all by Patrick Oppmann over at CNN, who is the publisher of this story that ran yesterday morning. So let's read through it. And this is you are going to see, I think this is kind of the template for more and more of these stories that you're going to see. This is going to be the template for the media to try and go after the Trump administration in what I'll note is their very popular approach to illegal immigration. We covered the CBS YouGov poll two weeks ago that showed that 56% of Americans are in favor of mass deportation. 56%. 56 to 44. It's an overwhelming majority when you look at polling and public sentiment of issues. So this, I think, is probably going to be one of the ways in which the media tries to lower that 56% number by bringing these stories to light. So let's dive into the details. In a dilapidated home on the outskirts of Havana, Heidi Sanchez shows off photos from a past life. She flips through images on her iPhone of visits to SeaWorld with her husband and 17-month-old daughter and the couple dressing up in Santa attire for Christmas. With Sanchez saying, "I don't know if it was the American dream, but it was my dream, my family." That dream and family were ripped away in late April when Sanchez was deported from Florida to her native Cuba, even though both her daughter and husband are U.S. citizens. Now, I'll note this. The fact that your daughter is a U.S. citizen does not guarantee you the process of staying in the United States. She notes, her husband was also a citizen. Sure. There are plenty of individuals that are married to somebody that are not U.S. citizens. And like everything else, there is a legal process to go through and get a green card and be married to somebody and not worry about being deported. Of course, that was not followed in this case. Sanchez crossed into the United States from Mexico in 2019 when the first Trump administration required asylum seekers to wait on the other side of the border for immigration appointments as part of the Remain in Mexico program. But Sanchez said threats from cartels, which often target Cubans for kidnappings and extortion, prevented her from making her appointment. When she finally did cross the border again, she told immigration agents that her life was at risk in Mexico and she was allowed to stay. After 9 months in immigration custody, she was released and able to join her family in Tampa. There, she studied to become a nursing assistant, met her husband, a naturalized U.S. citizen, also from Cuba, and after several sessions of IVF treatments, finally realized her dreams of becoming a mom. And that paragraph is very important because it shows that, oh, well, look at this. So individuals... not a violent criminal. She was trying to become a nursing student. She met her husband. They went through IVF treatments. God knows who paid for that. And she became a mom. Sanchez maintains she hardly fits the stereotypes of dangerous undocumented immigrants that the Trump administration says it's taking off U.S. streets. As she noted, I've never had so much as a ticket. And here is the key paragraph in the entire CNN story. Still, with the immigration hearings she had missed in 2019. What? She missed immigration hearings in 2019? Why? Why did she miss immigration hearings in 2019? She tried to come into the country. She was told to remain in Mexico. That was the policy of the previous administration. She came back. Claimed that she was being threatened, her life was threatened in Mexico. She was allowed into the country. She was held for 9 months by immigration officials and then released into the United States. So why did she miss immigration appointments in 2019? Was that the case? CNN doesn't dig into the details. The reason why she was likely deported. Obviously, I don't have all of the information. Like many of these other stories, they are not public cases to consume. But I would suspect that she has not been following all of the rules and all of the laws as it relates to immigration. Again, right here, still with the immigration hearing she had missed in 2019 and the changing political fortune for Cuban immigrants who had resided in the United States, all but guaranteed Sanchez time in the United States was running out. Well, yeah, absolutely. If she did not follow the legal immigration process, if she was in fact in the United States illegally, if she missed immigration hearings that would have allowed her to stay in the United States legally, then yes, in fact, her time was running out. We are a country of laws. We are a country of law and order. And if you determine that you are not going to follow the laws that we have in place, specifically as it relates to immigration, there is a high likelihood and a high probability you are going to be deported from the United States. This is not a very controversial thing here. This is not very hard to understand. If you are going to skirt under the law as it relates to immigration, you are probably going to have to deal with some repercussions of that. It's, again, we are in a country of laws. If you choose not to follow those as somebody who's an illegal immigrant, you may have to deal with some consequences. I don't know what else to say. In April, Sanchez was contacted by Immigration and Customs Enforcement that an appointment she had with officers was being moved up to the next day. Still, her attorney told her it was likely a routine check-in. Instead, when she showed up for the appointment with her daughter, Caitlin, and an attorney, ICE agents told her she was being taken into custody and to hand over her daughter to relatives. Sanchez said that the agents informed her to call the father, aka her husband, to come get her. You are staying here. I told them, don't take away my daughter. They never said I could take her with me or not. In a statement, the Department of Homeland Security denies Sanchez and her attorney's accounts that she was not given the option to take her daughter with you. According to DHS Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin, we take our responsibility to protect children seriously and will continue to work with federal law enforcement to ensure that children are safe and protected. The Trump administration is giving parents in this country illegally the opportunity to self-deport and take control of their departure process with the potential ability to return legally the right way and come back to America to live the American dream. And this doesn't add up from anything I understand as well. I mean, there was just a story, was it last week, of a mother being deported and her kids being deported with her, and the media was freaking out. Why were these children being deported? Well, the children weren't being deported. The mother had the choice to take them with her, and she did. So I have no reason to believe that this individual in Florida was treated any differently than the mother of three that was deported a couple of weeks ago by the administration. Again, also illegally in the country. Sanchez's attorney said they tried to stop her deportation by arguing that her removal would hurt her daughter, who she was breastfeeding and has suffered seizures. But 2 days later, as Sanchez's attorneys were requesting a hearing in the case, she was already in the air on a deportation flight to Havana. That's a sad situation, sure. But because you have a 17-month-old daughter and you're breastfeeding is not a legal reason to stay in the United States. I don't know what the left can't really wrap their head around on this. Is it a sad story? Absolutely. Is there a level of empathy that you have for a story like this? Yes, absolutely. But you just don't get carte blanche to walk into the United States of America and do whatever you damn well please. And I don't know why the left cannot wrap their head around that notion. The reason people are so frustrated with what's going on is because they have watched year after year after year of individuals ignoring our laws, ignoring our processes and procedures as it relates to illegal immigration, and then crying a foul when they're held accountable. Do I have empathy? Yes. Do I have sympathy? Not at all. You decide that you are going to fly under the law, you are going to skip immigration hearings, you're going to get deported. I don't know what else to tell you. This has been very well telegraphed by the administration. Anybody that says that they are shocked by what's going on or they can't believe what they're reading is either stupid or is purposefully trying to mislead the situation. It's one or the other. This is exactly what Trump said he was going to do in the campaign. It's what he said he was going to do the night that he won his election. And it's what he said he was going to do from January 20th onward when he was inaugurated and became the president of the United States again. When he put people like Tom Homan and Kristi Noem in their positions. Did you guys think that they were bluffing? Did you guys assume that they weren't going to follow through on this? That was a huge miscalculation if that was the case. Sanchez's attorney said, in cases like this, there are very strong humanitarian factors, and Heidi did not deserve to be removed the way that she was. She didn't deserve it? Why? We're not talking about things that are deserved or not. We're talking about legal versus illegal. If I decide to get in my car tonight and drive drunk and put myself and other motorists on the road at risk and get pulled over by law enforcement and arrested and charged with a DWI, I don't get to claim, well, I didn't deserve this. I didn't hit anybody. I didn't crash my car. I didn't injure anybody. I don't deserve to be arrested and treated this way and charged with a DWI. It's not about whether it's deserving or not. If you broke the law, if you're illegally in the country, you're not in a position to describe and determine what you deserve or not. As an American citizen, I don't deserve, and you don't deserve, to have to watch your country be taken over by individuals who have no regard for U.S. immigration law and want to break it for whatever reason. I don't deserve that. Her attorney said the manner in which Sanchez was repeatedly moved from different ICE facilities, making it impossible to see her client before her fast-track deportation, was shady. Now, any possible legal avenue for Sanchez to return to the United States would likely take years, her attorney said. Sanchez and her family are hoping that the backlash to her story could lead to enough public support, particularly among Cuban-American communities that supported Trump in the 2024 presidential race, to enable a reunification. So that's the only reason this story is written. CNN says it right there. Instead of describing and going through the details of why Heidi Sanchez ignored at least one, if not multiple, immigration hearings in 2019, instead of any discussion as to why she didn't go through the legal process, especially if she married somebody, to stay in the country illegally, is not discussed at all. These are key elements to the story, and you and I know damn well why they're not in here. Because they don't fit CNN's narrative of Trump is a heartless scumbag who is just deporting poor women from the United States of America who have never done anything wrong. It doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit the bill. It doesn't fit the agenda. This story is written exclusively for emotional purposes, and it says so right there in the story. U.S. Representative Kathy Castro, the Democrat out of Florida, posted on X along with a photo of her meeting Sanchez's husband, Carlos. The Trump administration is ripping families apart for political games. We are pursuing every action to reunite this family and unfortunately are still waiting for a response from the White House to explain their illegal actions. Well, it's not illegal to deport people from the United States. It's not illegal for individuals who are breaking immigration law to be deported. For individuals have decided that they are going to give the middle finger to the U.S. immigration system and do whatever they want. Folks, I'm out of sympathy for this. I am completely out of sympathy. If you choose to break the law, if you choose not to follow U.S. immigration law, why am I supposed to care? Why am I supposed to have so much pain and hurt in my heart like Representative Kathy Castro is? I just don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. You willingly took these actions. You willingly decided to do this. Heidi Sanchez, according to details, has had a valid deportation order since 2019. She ignored her court hearings and then was deported. I don't care. I just don't. And I think the vast majority of Americans are in the exact same place. If people want to come into the country legally, there is an opportunity, there is an avenue, there is a process to do so. She decided that she was going to ignore that. She, according to details in a different article over at the Miami Herald, she has had a valid deportation order since 2019 and has essentially been living under the law since then. And so the argument, oh, well, she was trying to become a nursing aide and she got married and she got a husband. Who cares? She's illegally in the country. She decided she was going to fly under the law. And there's a period of time that you can get away with that. She had no problem under Joe Biden. She was at zero risk of being deported under him at all. But there is a new administration in town. There is a new administration that is holding the rule of law up. There is a new administration that is going to hold people accountable for their actions. And so that's the process. This is reading directly from the Miami Herald article yesterday. Sanchez tried to seek asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border in 2019 at a time when the first Trump administration, as we read in the CNN piece, required migrants to remain in the country until they could see an immigration judge. She attended a first hearing in the United States and was sent back to Mexico. but she missed her second hearing in the United States because she was allegedly kidnapped in Mexico, according to her lawyer. She tried again to present herself at the border, still since a judge has already issued a deportation order after she missed the hearing. ICE detained her and held her in a facility for 9 months. But because Cuba was not accepting deportees at the time, ICE released her under a supervision order known as an I-220B, which required that Sanchez attend regular check-ins. She was detained at one such appointment last week and was sent to Cuba 2 days later. That's it. That's the story. But of course, CNN is only interested in the heart-wrenching part of this. As controversy swirls around her case, Sanchez is struggling to adapt to the dire situation in Cuba, where daily power outages and increasing scarcities have made life even tougher on the island when she left 6 years ago. She lives in a house with relatives where part of the ceilings are caving in and electricity is cut for hours each day. The cell reception from one state-run provider is so spotty in the area that she either has to walk several blocks away or scale up to the roof of the house to call her husband and daughter. Her family is only a 90-minute flight away, but for the immediate, for her future remains antastically out of reach. Yeah, well, she's not a legal citizen. Yeah, she's not legally in the United States. Again. Is this a sad story? Absolutely. Is this an unfortunate story? Absolutely. Absolutely. But what do you do when individuals have determined that they are no longer going to follow the law? What do you do when individuals have decided themselves that they are going to skirt under the rule of law, when they are going to fly in the face of U.S. immigration law and act in any way that they want to, not the way that is the law, not the way that fits best for the United States of America and law that exists, but for themselves. That's the situation here. Now, that doesn't make it any less sad. But it does mean that I don't have to have an incredible amount of sympathy for individuals who have determined to break the law and act in an unlawful manner. I just don't. The American people watched years of unlawfulness unfold under their very eyes. They watched apartment complexes be taken over by dangerous Venezuelan street gangs. People kicked out of their apartment as it was taken over by a gang. Paying rent to Trende Aragua to live in an apartment in the United States of America. They read the horrific stories of people like Lakin Riley, who was doing nothing wrong but going on a jog one morning to be brutally assaulted and murdered by an illegal immigrant in the United States. They've seen story after story, account after account of individuals illegally in the country. There is no evidence that Heidi Sanchez was a dangerous criminal. I'll give you that. Dangerous criminal or not, she's illegally in the United States of America. She has had an active deportation request for 6 freaking years. And that's the story. Now, CNN doesn't mention that in their story. The Miami Herald does. I guess they're a little bit more of a news organization than CNN is. But I think that might, you know, that might be something worth mentioning. I would assume, right, if you're writing a story for CNN, that you might want to include some pertinent facts, like the idea that she had an active deportation request, might be relevant to do, but it's okay. That's not a situation that is relevant for them. Because again, it's about emotion. It's about fear. It's about them garnering sympathy for individuals who broke the law and turning people against the administration and the I guess, essentially American rule of law, right? The system that you and I exist under, the process that we are required to follow. And that's it. That's the story. And you are going to see a lot more of these. Once the left and once Democrats are successful with one of these stories and are able to get the administration to blink, it is going to be a field day of these stories. I'm surprised there's not more of them. And I'm really surprised that I'm surprised it's taken this long for a story like this to pop up. And there's been other ones, sure. This is the first one that I saw that really was simply trying to be emotional, was missing key facts and just skimmed over important pieces of details, like why did she miss an immigration here? Her lawyer, who she's and now has, claims it's because she was kidnapped in Mexico. That CNN didn't mention that. They spoke to her attorney the entire time, probably because there was no way to back up that information, no way to verify that that was actually the case. So the attempt is emotion. As we've talked about, Democrats cannot win on the issue of illegal immigration. They had 4 years to win on this issue if it was such a popular thing. They were unsuccessful in doing so. President Joe Biden's approval rating was atrociously low as it related to immigration, and it was a large reason why Trump won in November. So because Democrats don't have the ideas, because Democrats don't really have anything useful that they can go with, they're just pulling the emotion card. They're pulling the fear card. They're pulling the sympathy card because they don't have the policy card as it relates to immigration. And so that's the latest. That's what's going on as it relates to immigration in this story. I'm sure we'll probably see this pop up maybe a couple more of these stories, and I'll keep an eye out for them because I think it is an interesting trend to keep an eye on and to follow. Once again, I want to thank the law group here in Wilmington for their support of the show this morning. Give them a call at 910-251-6088 or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's going to do it for a Tuesday edition of The Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. I'm in again for Vince Coakley, 10 to noon on WBT. Hopefully you can join me for that. If not, we're back here tomorrow morning right here on The Nick Craig Show.